Joan Osborne recently released her 10th album, which was created with the same team that had worked on Relish, her multi-platinum recording a decade ago. The latest one is called Little Wild One, and although Ms. Osborne is from Kentucky, her CD is largely about New York City. It brought Joan Osborne to the show a few months ago, and we're playing it for you again now. I began by asking her, who's the little wild one?
It kind of depends on who you ask, and it kind of depends on the day. I co-wrote that with Eric Bazillion and Rob Hyman, who are on the team that worked on the record, and I think probably each one of us would have a different answer to that question. To me, it is sometimes a song of seduction, but then I'm also a mother, so it sometimes is something that I think of my daughter, you know, in connection with Little Wild One, because she is that, that's for sure.
Is it odd going back to a production team you worked with 10 years ago and coming up with something that is now 2008?
Well, you know, it sort of happened very naturally. It wasn't something that we kind of, you know, masterminded and planned. I had just kept in touch with those guys over the years. And, you know, Eric Bazillion and I were emailing each other and saying, oh, we got to get together and write someday. And rather than just sort of put it off till someday, we had some time in our schedules. I went down to Philly to write with him. And he and Rob Hyman are still in a band called The Hooters together. And I think Rob, you know, happened to come by one day.
Well, you did at the restaurant once.
A little different kind of vibe, I think. It's not the same thing, but I'm sure they'd love for you to bring that up when you speak to them.
You've been touring with the Dixie Chicks and also with the Reconstituted Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Are people still angry with the Dixie Chicks after all this time?
You know, I don't think so. Actually, when I was touring with them, was at the height of that controversy. And it was very interesting to be the opening act on that tour and see what it was like for them to be in the midst of this huge media firestorm. And I tended to feel like the media were sort of fanning the flames because the story was of benefit to them. And we would do these shows where there would be a tiny little knot of protesters with their signs out in front of this big arena that was full of Dixie Chicks fans. And the protesters were invariably hugely outnumbered by the ring of media people who were standing around them and trying to get, you know, the other side of the story.
And so, you would have thought that half the crowd at the concert was people protesting if you saw the news story.
Exactly, yeah. But, of course, it wasn't like that at all.
Now, you've done this on your own label. You started off in small independent labels and then went to Mercury.
Mm-hmm, yeah, it's a major label.
And here you are. Again, is this the future of recording, do you think? Because so many people are now putting out CDs on their own labels.
Yeah, well, it's who knows what the future is going to hold. But I do think, you know, it's pretty clear that the dominant paradigm of major labels is crumbling and has crumbled. For me, I think the key is going to be live performance. And I think a lot of the bands, you know, in sort of the hippie jam band scene have created really, you know, devoted followings from their live performances. And it's not so much about selling the records as about selling concert tickets.
And this has turned the music business around totally. In the early days of rock and roll, people did performances to sell records. Now they're doing records to sell performances.
Yeah, although, you know, I was reading about James Brown, and I don't think he made any money off of his records. He just needed material to play for his audiences, and the records were more about promoting his concerts, and that's where he made his money, and of course, was an amazing artist in that field. So it all depends. You know, any way I can still do it, I'll be happy to do it.
Like Sarah Palin, you've lived in Anchorage, right? But a different Anchorage?
Oh, please don't compare me to Sarah Palin.
Your anchorage is in Kentucky.
My anchorage is in Kentucky. And
I didn't know there was an Anchorage, Kentucky.
Well, there is, and there was and is, and that's my hometown. It's a tiny little pinprick on the map.
What kind of music did you listen to when you were growing up?
You know, all different kinds. When I was in elementary school, I sang in the choir, and we did Elizabethan madrigals and multi-part harmony stuff. I also, you know, growing up in Kentucky, I did hear a little bit of country music, but I was a rock and roll fan and listened to the rock radio. And although when you say rock radio and pop radio back then, it was a much more varied format where you would hear, you know, a country song right next to a Rolling Stones song right next to a, you know, pop song. So I think I had a pretty broad, you know, listening experience, even growing up in a fairly backwater place.
What word do I want to use for radio today, at least music radio, the very tight format of those has to affect it almost every artist.
Yeah,
it is. Sometimes you can't, if you're doing something that's kind of country but not really country, then you can't get on the country stations. or if it's real authentic country, you can't get on the country stations.
You can't get on the country stations. I'm not sure who gets on the country stations anymore. Yeah, it's definitely difficult. But as you know, as we've said, it seems like that paradigm is breaking down. So those kind of things are less important, and the more direct contact with your audience that is available through concerts and the internet seems to be more important.
Do you ever worry that people are going to typecast you because of a song? For example, you did What If God Was One of Us, and I'm sure people made all sorts of assumptions about you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Let's Just Get Naked. People are going to make other assumptions about you.
You know, I, a friend of mine says that it's none of my business what other people think about me, and that's a quote that I try to keep in mind. I mean, I know that people's impulse is to categorize you so that they know how to think about you as an artist or as anyone, but I don't feel like I need to be what people expect me to be. I really need to do things that are interesting to me, and that's what makes it all worth it. You know, it's not an easy business to be in, but as long as I'm excited creatively, then, you know, people can call me whatever they want to call me.
Well, sure, but it's like you saw what happened to the Dixie Chicks. They made just some kind of passing remark about politics.
Yeah.
and people take this very seriously.
Yeah. Well, I think in their case, because they were big country music stars and were selling lots of records to a country audience, that they were, you know, particularly vulnerable to something like that. You know, I don't think I'm in the same position where I would take that risk by expressing my political opinions because my audience is very different. So I think it really just depends on you know, what kind of audience you have.
You've also performed for the Dalai Lama.
Yes, I have. Oh, what a wonderful experience that was. It was in the foothills of the Himalaya in his monastery there in Dharamsala.
Did he make requests?
No, but he was grooving, and he was, you know, moving his head up and down and smiling and, you know, getting into it. And I'd still have this picture of this beautiful eagle that was circling above us in the mountains as we were doing our performance for him and him smiling, and it was really amazing.
You also were involved in the documentary film Standing in the Shadows of Motown.
Mm-hmm.
You never recorded for Motown, did you?
No, I never recorded for Motown, but the documentary was about the Funk Brothers, who were the Motown studio band and played on, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hit songs, and were largely sort of, you know, out of the public consciousness, and people didn't really know about their contributions. So the movie was really about rectifying that and allowing people to understand what these guys have meant in American musical history. And part of the film was, you know, current artists or recent artists performing classic Motown songs with the Funk Brothers in front of an audience in Detroit. So that was the part that I was involved in, and that was really cool.
Another example of your genre bending. Many artists wind up being stuck in a genre, but mm-hmm. At different times you could have been called a pop singer, a country singer, a rock singer, a soul singer. In the end, it's all just music to you? Or do you have to change your mindset a little bit? Because soul music is sung differently than country music, is it?
Well, it all depends on the song, and I think that there is definitely enough of a thread of commonality among these different kinds of music. You know, soul music comes from gospel music, and also, you know, country, rock and roll come from the same, you know, branches of the same stream. And I think there is enough commonality among these kinds of American music that for me, it doesn't seem like a huge leap to go from one type of song to another. And if I did have to define myself, I would say that I am a soul singer, because that, to me, is the imperative thing to bring to any interpretation of any song is the soul.
Your first album was called Soul Show.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Where you were trying to tell people, hey, this is the way you should think of me?
Well, it just seemed like it was actually a recording of a live performance, and it seemed like that's what it was. It was a soul show, and I was trying to put my heart and soul in it.
One thing any number of artists have told me that they don't like about recording is that it becomes too perfect. And part of the fun of a live performance is that things happen.
Yeah, things happen.
And you get all sorts of energy that you wouldn't have otherwise, but you also, sometimes there's something nice that comes out of a mistake.
Oh, of course. Well, I think that's what, you know, Miles Davis said something about, like, there's no such thing as a mistake. That's just a different path that you can take and a different way to interpret something. And those mistakes will throw you off balance, so you're not just phoning it in. You really have to be very present, and you have to be able to be spontaneous. And that's one of the things I love about live performance, is you really have to be able to take whatever happens in the moment and work with it and work with what the audience is giving you, what the band is giving you. You know, I've never wanted to play to pre-recorded tracks or some things that some people do, because to me that takes away the vital element of what it means to be live in front of you and the possibility that anything can happen.
I would assume that most people growing up in Anchorage, Kentucky, when they decide where they want to move, would think Nashville first. You came to New York.
Yeah, well, you know, I did not have a music career in mind when I came to New York. I came here to go to New York University and to study filmmaking, and that's really what I thought I was going to do. I thought I was going to become a documentary filmmaker.
So how did you wind up a professional, not only a professional singer, a singer with hit songs?
Well, it took a long time. I sort of went on a dare to a place that had an open mic night, and a friend of mine dared me to get up and sing, and I did.
So it was like karaoke? Suddenly you have a singing career?
Yeah, and there was a big producer in the audience that night, and I got discovered. No, it wasn't like that. The thing that I did discover that night was that there was a really vibrant music scene going on in New York City at that time, blues clubs and, you know, roots music, and a lot of things were happening that I hadn't been aware of, but I really was captivated by it and started going out at night and started spending all the money that I should have been saving for my college tuition on Etta James records and Howlin' Wolf records. And
that's okay.
Yeah,
that's another education.
Well, yeah. Eventually, I realized that I wasn't going to go back to school and that this was my path.
And you've abandoned filmmaking totally?
Well, for now. I mean, music is such an all-encompassing thing that I don't think it's something that I could sort of half do. You know, I really need to give all my energy to it.
The new album is called Little Wild One, and it's on her label, which is called Womanly Hips.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Let's listen
I'm a
to
great
something
fan of your
from
show.
Your album.
Thank you.
Daddy, oh, daddy, oh, when I close my eyes, there's a cyclone there and I want to ride. An electric train to a long lost world, to the land of a thousand dancing girls. Come to me, my daddy, oh, take me where I wanna go, to the world I left behind, down the Coney Island line. Oh, daddy, oh, daddy, oh, daddy, tell me the tale that the captain told, when the lightning flashed and the thunder rolled. We are all quite safe, we will be there soon. We will all have fun when we reach the moon. Come to me, my daddy, oh, take me where I wanna go. Shoot, dream again. Come to me, my daddy, oh.